Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It's Tuesday, April 14th, 2015, and today we're going to be talking about pesticides. Pesticides is a very big subject. We're not going to be able to cover every detail about every pesticide on the show. It's an enormous subject. But we're going to talk about pesticides in general, how they can affect your health, different things about pesticides that you should be aware of, and what you can do instead of using toxic pesticides. We'll throw a few tips in there too. My guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, and he, I think, is the most regular guest on the show. I think he's done more shows than anybody else, but he has so much information to share with us as a toxicologist who is dealing with toxic chemicals and their health effects every single day. He knows so much, and I'm so grateful that he spends so much time doing shows on Toxic Free Talk Radio so that you can have all that information. Hello, Dr. Gilbert.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Very good. It's a beautiful day here in Seattle.
It's a beautiful day here in Florida, too, in Clearwater, Florida.
Solar panels are doing very well today, generating lots of electricity.
Good. Let me ask you an off-the-subject question here, because you have solar panels. Somebody wrote in to my toxic-free Q&A blog the other day asking me if there were EMF dangers associated with solar panels.
No. The solar panels turn sunlight into DC power, and the DC power can either be converted to AC, which we use in our homes, at the site of the panels, or down, it would be a box in your house called an inverter. And then that energy is then moved over to your electrical box and passed through back to the house with AC current. So there's no EMF other than what you would normally have if you're connected to the grid.
That's what I thought the answer was, too, because she was very concerned about solar panels having more EMF dangers, but I can't imagine that they would be worse than high-intensity power lines.
No, not anywhere near as bad as high-intensity power lines. I think solar panels are very passive, by and large, and they're a great investment. I wish Florida had better rules and regulations, better incentives. You have some of the most restrictive laws in the country about using solar panels, the most difficult laws.
Well, I wish we had better laws, too, because we have so much sunshine. It just seems natural. And, you know, I was reading a book about the history of solar energy, and at one time in the past, there was more solar energy used in Florida than anywhere else in the United States, like back
really?
In the 20s and 30s, that people had solar water heaters and all kinds of things like that. It was a very big thing in Florida. And now I practically never see a solar panel.
You know, it's really unfortunate that the government is not providing more incentive. Washington State, we're very fortunate, has very good incentives for using solar panels. So it's a really excellent investment, both financially and for the environment. And it's really unfortunate Florida hasn't followed suit with providing their incentives for their citizens.
I agree, and hopefully that will change. So let's talk
about
pesticides.
Mark Rubio about that. Find out what politicians are thinking about solar power.
I will. Okay, let's talk about pesticides. This is such a huge subject, and one of the things that I want to say just right off is that I think that people who are not educated as much as they could be on toxic chemicals think that if they hear a word like pesticides or plastics or some of those VOCs, terms like that, where they really represent a whole class of chemicals and not just one. There's not just one pesticide. When you say pesticides, we're talking about thousands of chemicals.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah. And so each one of those affect our bodies in different ways, infect the environment in different ways. And the thing that's most interesting and I think important to me as a human being is that they have different degrees of toxicity, but they also stick around for different periods of time. And there's something called the half-life that if you want to know how long it takes for a pesticide to no longer be there, what you want to look up is something called the half-life. It doesn't even tell you, like, it's going to last for 30 years. It'll say it'll degrade half way in so many years. And,
right.
And so you really need to know, is this a short, quick biodegradable pesticide, or is it going to last for 30 or 100 years? I think that's one of the most important questions. But
that's a really important question.
Yeah.
And really important comment. And I want to point out, I just want to make a note that today, 1964, Rachel Carson died. So really sort of on the anniversary of Rachel Carson's death, and she's the author of Silent Spring in 1962. You know, she was born in 1907 and was a marine biologist who was a brilliant writer, and she received the Presidential Award Medal of Honor in 1980. And I just want to read a couple of quotes from Rachel Carson's book.
Please.
So one of them is, "We are rightly appalled by the genetic effects of radiation. How then can we be indifferent to the same effects in chemicals we disseminate widely in our environment?" Another one is, "As crude a weapon as a caveman's club, the chemical barrage has been hurled against the fabric of life." And this goes not just for pesticides, but for a wide variety of chemicals that we're exposed to. Another one is, "The control of nature is a phrase conceived in arrogance, born in the Neanderthal age of biology and the convenience of man." And lastly, "We're going to live so intently with chemicals, eating and drinking them, take them into the very marrow of our bones, we had better know something about their nature and power." And I think this last quote is most important, because we, in using pesticides, and pesticides do have a good function and purpose, we really need to know a lot about their nature and power. And you define one of the most important ones is how much they bioaccumulate and biomagnify. And Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, was really about DDT, which bioaccumulates in fat and can be excreted in breast milk and be long-lived in the very long-lived in the environment that destroyed a lot of the birds. And now it's showing up in our whales and other mammals that are in the oceans. So bioaccumulation and pesticides, really important to be thinking about.
One of the things that I noticed in looking at your pesticides chapter this morning, I should say, I didn't introduce you. I just said hello to you. Dr. Gilbert is the author of a book that I highly recommend called A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. And you can go to his website, toxipedia.org, T-O-X-I-P-E-D-I-A.org, and get a free copy of this book, a free PDF copy of this book. And I was looking at the pesticides chapter this morning before the show, and I noticed that you have the little picture of an old ad for DDT, and I had to smile because I did a two-hour-long seminar a few years ago, and I started with a similar ad for DDT. The point being that DDT used to be, before it was banned, and this is the pesticide that Rachel Carson wrote about in Silent Spring, it was advertised by the government to housewives, encouraging them to use it and spray it all over everything.
In our wallpaper. You could buy it impregnated wallpaper with DDT.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just considered like it was, I think, called the housewife's friend or something like that.
Right.
And and it was an extremely toxic pesticide that does not break down quickly, and so then it bioaccumulates. And when you have something accumulating in your body, it accumulates and accumulates, and then you get sick at a certain point. Your body accumulates enough and you get sick, except that DDT is extremely, extremely toxic.
Yeah,
so it doesn't take much.
DDT is a classic example of a bioaccumulative organochlorine pesticide. And the reason it got so widely used was it's highly effective. It's very effective against mosquitoes, others are adapting to it a bit. But it didn't appear to be toxic to humans and animals, because people would spray. There's some classic pictures of people following the spray trucks down and playing in the mist of that DDT in it. But then we found out that, and this was back to the endpoints, what endpoint you're looking for, it was disastrous for high predator birds and their bird shell eggs, and destroyed huge populations of eagles and other birds that are just coming back now. And we were not paying attention to the other toxic effects, including endocrine disruptors and low-level effects of humans.
We need to go to break, but when we come back, we'll talk more about pesticides with Dr. Stephen Gilbert, author of A Small Dose of Toxicology. And you can actually just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and look for today's show. And you can click right on the title and it'll take you exactly to the page where you can get this free book, which is very valuable. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. My guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert from Toxipedia. His website is toxipedia.org. Dr. Gilbert, you mentioned earlier that this was the anniversary of Rachel Carson's death, and during the break I just ran and got my copy of Silent Spring, and I think it's so wonderful that we serendipitously chose this date, because I didn't know that this was the anniversary. But I'd like to read some of my favorite quotes from Rachel Carson, too, in between. So here's one. Storage of chemicals in human beings has been well investigated, and we know that the average person is storing potentially harmful amounts. This situation, let's see, I'm skipping around. Anyway, this situation also means that today, and this is 1962, today, this means that the average individual almost certainly starts life with the first deposit of the growing load of chemicals his bodies will be required to carry henceforth.
That's absolutely correct, that you were exposed to a wide range of chemicals, including other industrial chemicals as well as pesticides, starting at conception and moving forward. And we also know that kids are not little adults. They eat more, breathe more, drink more than adults do, and they're smaller, so they're exposed and they have a bigger dose, bigger exposure to chemicals.
They do. One of the things that I was horrified to realize when I read Silent Spring, and you would think I would have read Silent Spring many years ago because I've been doing this work for 30 years, but it was only about 5 years ago that I read Silent Spring. And when I read in that book that they already knew in 1944 that that pesticides were ubiquitous on the planet, that there was no place that you could go where there were no pesticides. They already knew that in 1944. And that meant that I was born already polluted. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that. When I was born in 1955, there were already pesticides everywhere. And so my mother, I'm sure you're familiar with that study that Environmental Working Group did a few years ago where they tested the blood of newborns. And they found all those chemicals. And I thought, oh, this is something recent that's happening. But no, when I was born in 1955, and everybody, all of us, we were all born already polluted because our parents already had toxic chemicals in their bodies.
Yeah, and it's really true. We really need to be more aware of that, paying attention to that issue, because we're exposed to a lot of chemicals, and you can see the rates of disease, childhood diseases, has also increased. Just to come back to pesticides, you made another really good point that pesticides aren't just one thing. They're also, there are different classes of them. There's herbicides that kill plants. There's insecticides that focus on insects. There's rodenticides that focus on rodents. And fungicides that focus on other microbes and fungal material. So there's a wide range of chemicals, and we're not exposed to just one pesticide. We're exposed to a range of different pesticides that have different functions and different mechanisms of action.
Well, like in a typical day, how many pesticides do you think we're exposed to?
Oh, God, I don't know. That's a good question, because if you think about what we eat, there's some really good studies show that eating organic grown food does reduce your excretion of pesticides. And it's hard to get a handle on what the pesticides are being used, because there's no reporting system for that. But they do look at metabolites. So there's different classes of organophosphates, organochlorines, and some of these pesticides have similar metabolites, and usually you're tracking metabolites, the pesticides, not the actual pesticide. But we're exposed to a variety of them and cause reproductive effects, cause intellectual deficits and during development, and cancer. So there's immunological diseases. So pesticides are something to be really careful of. And I also want to mention that on a part of my website, I have a website called IPMopedia for Integrated Pest Management, which really talks about trying to reduce the use of pesticides. So chemical pesticides should be the last resort. in your management of any kind of pest, whether it's a plant or a bug or a rodent.
I totally agree. So I would just like to just think for a second about, see if I can, how many pesticides I can identify that someone might be exposed to during the day. So there could be pesticides that you're breathing, like household pesticides where you've sprayed for ants or flies or any kind of bugs. There might be mothballs, which is a pesticide. There might be in your food, unless you're eating organic food, there will most certainly be pesticides. Let's see, where else? Outside, you probably have some pesticides in your garden, and if you haven't applied them, maybe your neighbors have or the city has applied them and that you're getting pesticide drift.
Yeah.
If you're using natural personal care products, but not organic, there's going to be pesticides in them. If you're using not natural personal care products, that's going to have other petrochemicals in them, but not pesticides because they're not made from plants. let's see, what else? Can you think of any others off the top of your head?
Yeah, well, if you're a worker, if you're a farm worker, you can be exposed to a wide range of pesticides at much higher concentrations. If you're a child out working in these fields, you can be tracking pesticides indoors. And I think that's another reason it's important always for everybody to take their shoes off when they come inside. Because modern pesticides break down in the sunlight, so you track them indoors and into your carpets, and children are hand to mouth, they have their hands on the carpets, remember, that these pesticides last longer indoors than they do outdoors. So it's really important to take off your shoes and wash your hands when you come indoors just to protect against pesticides. Another curious and sort of modern type of pesticide is nanoparticles. Nanosilver has been impregnated in a variety of products. They're designed to control bacteria and funguses. And these nanomaterials, including nanosilver, are in more products and also should be considered as pesticides, so that's their purpose. And you have to think about the school environment for kids.
Yes.
You know, we try to get integrated pest management policies that use in schools. We worked hard at that in Seattle here, and Oregon's got some good laws in that. I'm not familiar with what there is in Florida. But, you know, this is another very important area because children, remember, are small. They're exposed, but they have a bigger dose because they're small size. Their nervous system is developing or more vulnerable. So the school and playgrounds are really important area of exposure to pesticides. And you mentioned diet, nutritional issues, and what kind of food we eat. Water supplies can be contaminated. So it's just a wide range.
When we come back from the break, which we have to go to now, I want to talk about pesticide regulation. I know that's something we don't usually talk about, except that pesticides have a lot of regulations, and I want our listeners to find out something about this because that indicates to me how toxic they are. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert. He's at toxipedia.org, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, who is the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals, and his website is toxipedia.org. It's a very interesting website because he really looks at toxic issues, not just from the health effects, but social, environmental, historical, all kinds of different viewpoints. And so he knew some things like that today is the anniversary of Rachel Carson's death, and she wrote, I think, the first popular book on pesticides, Silent Spring, and here we are talking about Silent Spring today.
Yeah, really
pesticides today.
I would nominate her for being on the dollar bill.
What?
I would nominate her for being on the dollar bill when we change who's on the bills.
Good idea.
Honor.
Yeah, yeah. I really think that Rachel Carson was so pivotal, and what she wrote was so important just as a foundation of what we need to know today, that she really needs to be highly, highly honored and known.
Absolutely.
And we need to, the new generations need to be introduced to her, and she needs to not be forgotten. Because she just was in the world of toxics, which I think is the number one most important issue in the world today. She is definitely laid the groundwork for where we are today. So let's talk about, I want to talk about the regulations of pesticides.
Before we jump to regulation, can I make one more comment? You asked a really important question about our exposure. I want to mention that, you know, nature has made a lot of pesticides. And when we drink a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, the caffeine in it is actually a pesticide. And we find it as a stimulant, but a very small bug would find it toxic because of their small size means a very small exposure is a big dose. The same with nicotine. And nicotine is actually a widely used pesticide extracted from tobacco plants. But nature has been developing pesticides. In response, humans have a liver to help metabolize these unwanted chemicals that are really from plants. You know, strychnine from trees. There's pyrethroid from chrysanthemums. So there's all kinds of pesticides in the that are quote-unquote natural, that are grown up by nature, because it is war out there trying to keep the bugs from eating the plants and the plants dominating other plants.
Yes.
So pesticides are both natural, and we've developed a very nasty array of manufactured chemicals that go all the way up to producing nerve gases, sarin gas, and others that are highly toxic, and we've sort of dumbed those things down to use in our against our to protect our plants.
Yes, I totally agree with everything you said. What I thought about, the reason I thought about regulations, I was thinking about it earlier before the show, but you mentioned silver, putting in nanoparticles of silver as a pesticide. And the two things that I want to say here are, one is that I think that silver is a good example of a less toxic pesticide. Like, you could have a pesticide that is airborne and very toxic and that you're breathing it in, or you could have something like silver that is mixed into paint and then acts to control mold on a wall, and you're never really exposed to that silver because it's just a particle that's encapsulated in the paint, but it kills the mold. But regardless, let me finish my sentence and then I'll let you talk. Of the toxicity or what our exposure is, every pesticide, anything that's considered to be a pesticide, has to be registered with the EPA. And I think that to me indicates how toxic these things are. And I just had somebody write to me in my Toxic Free Q&A about a product that somebody had asked about a couple of years ago, saying that the EPA had ordered them to stop distributing it because it contained, it was intended to kill mold. Therefore, it contained a pesticide and it had to be registered by the EPA and it wasn't.
Right. Yeah, so the pesticide regulations are really interesting. FIFRA, the Fungicide, Insecticide, Rodenticide Act, the Federal Insecticide Act, FIFRA, was passed in 1947. And I think it was in 1972 that it was moved to EPA. So the EPA sort of took over FIFRA, which regulates fungicides, rodenticides, insecticides, and herbicides. And this is really great. There are good regulations, or pretty good regulations, around the active ingredients of pesticides. There's a lot of testing done on them to try to understand their consequences to the organism as well as other ecological hazards, for example, to nematodes or frogs and things like that. For example, atrazine is an herbicide that appears to affect the development of frogs. So the EPA is required, and the company is required, to do a lot of studies to assess the potential hazardous effects. Now, the problem is there's also inert ingredients. So the pesticides, the active ingredient on the label, the active ingredient is a very small amount. So what is in this inert ingredient? And these things can be surfactants to help help the herbicide, for example, penetrate leaves, which can increase their toxicity to other plants and animals. So understanding the inert ingredients in the package of the pesticide is also really important. And that's not as well managed as it could be, because it's hard to find out what these inert ingredients are.
Yes, it's very hard to find out.
Yeah, very hard to find out in some cases. So I think you have to be really careful with the regulation. And it was also the Food Quality Protection Act gave a little bit more authority and tried to move it more toward a precautionary approach, particularly when it came to child health-related issues and child exposure, because children are the most affected class of people because of their detrimental effects in the developing nervous system. And pesticides, many of the pesticides act on the nervous system, act to affect neurotransmitters, like the organophosphates or acetylcholine esterases, where these inhibit the metabolism of acetylcholine. Excess acetylcholine can cause death and other side effects. So pesticides are hazardous, and it's really about how much you're exposed to and the dose response effect of pesticides.
One of the things that has been in the news the last week, I don't know if you saw this, about the family that went on vacation in the Caribbean, and a nearby room was being sprayed with regulated pesticide that should not be used on indoor use. And a company, Terminix, the company that should know how to use a toxic registered pesticide, applied this incorrectly. And it turned out that they've been applying it for the past year. And this family got so sick from it that they had to take them to the hospital and then airlift them to America. And when I see stories like this, I just say, why do we even, these kinds of pesticides should not be on the market at all. We need to go to break, but I'll let you respond to that when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. And when we come back, we'll talk more about pesticides. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert from Toxipedia.org, and he's the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals, which you can get for free. Every household should have one. Okay, Dr. Gilbert, so what do you think about what had just happened with the family getting sick from pesticides in their hotel room?
Yeah, there's just no excuse for that kind of exposure to pesticides indoors. And that comes back to being a lot more cautious of pesticides we use and know exactly what chemical we're being used. Like chlorpyrifos, very toxic, very useful pesticide in agriculture, but very toxic, was banned from home use in 2001. And you mentioned paint. And the paints can also have pesticides in them. One of them they use was mercury. So I actually put mercury in paint because mercury is a very good fungicide. So mm-hmm. You paint mercury, woodwork. But a family painted the walls of their child's bedroom with a mercury-based paint, mercury added to a paint. And the child was severely affected by the mercury exposure because the mercury evaporated out of the paint. So it's very important to understand, you know, how these products worked within paint, you know, can they evaporate out, and what problems they can cause. And remembering that if, you know, the example you mentioned, you know, the pesticide is sprayed in the home, if in the air, it's on the floor, on the woodwork, the child can easily get contaminated with pesticide or eat them, ingest them, as well as breathe them in. So there's just, we need to be a lot more careful, and that comes back to integrated pest management, where you really want a program that looks for the reason you have pests. One of the most important reasons is you got food for the pest, and you got to take the time to understand the biology of the pest and how best to interrupt that and get rid of the pest that you're trying to control or control the pest you're using. And there's many ways to do it besides using strong chemicals. And having integrated pest management program, particularly around schools, is really important because kids spend a lot of time there, and there's good ways to control the pest you're using, whether it's a rodent or it's a plant or it's an insect, without resorting to toxic chemicals.
That's totally right. And I know that I grew up in a world, which still exists, where especially, I've said this before, but especially people who were born around the time that I was born, we were born into this new age of all these chemicals had been developed during World War II. And then in the 50s, then we've got DuPont talking about better living through chemicals. And suddenly they've got all these chemicals and they're saying, oh, let's take all these wartime chemicals and use them in our culture. And so everybody's just like spraying pesticides and toxic chemicals all over everything, thinking that they're fine. And so we have that mentality of there's a pest, spray a chemical on it. You're sick, take a pill. And In fact, there's all these other things that you can do. I mean, we have to remember that our houses and our schools and our businesses, everything is built in these ecosystems where these things that we call pests live.
Absolutely.
And that if we have some awareness that we're living in an ecosystem, then we can get to know these other creatures who have a right to be living here and see how we can be sharing this space in a way that they get to have some space and we get to have our space in a way that
Absolutely.
They don't.
I think one great example of that right now is the colony collapse of bees, where bees being infected. And the latest study is showing that one of the pesticides may be a nicotinic-based pesticide that's affecting the bees. So, and bees are incredibly important in pollination, many of the plants that we depend on for our food supply. So you're absolutely right. We need to be thinking not just of ourselves, but also the whole ecological system. Much like what Rachel Carson really tried to bring out in Silent Spring, that we do not live in isolation. And I live in Seattle, Washington here. And at my desk this morning, I could look out the window and I saw three bald eagles circling around being hassled by crows. And that's a result of our being more cautious with pesticides. You know, the birds were able to recover after they rid their bodies of DDT and got less exposure to DDT and other organochlorine compounds.
Yes.
So it's really, really important. And I just to mention, there's been a great increase in developmental disabilities in kids from 97 to 2008, 17% increase in hyperactivity disorders, a 78% increase in autism. Childhood cancers have increased 25% from 1975 to 2004. Diabetes increased by 53%. And obesity has gone up by 171%. And all these potentially be due to not just pesticide exposure. Pesticides are a big factor in that. And we really need to be cautious about all the hazardous chemicals that we expose ourselves to from development, early in development.
Well, we have about 6 minutes left, so let's, or 5 minutes left. So let's just talk about real quickly, like, what are some alternatives? Like, first of all, you could eat organic food instead of eating conventional food with pesticides. And so what's another thing people could do that's quick?
Well, the real quick one is don't use pesticides around your house. You know,
yes.
Get out there and do a little weeding, get some exercise. You weren't trying to get rid of weeds, and that's what I do. I get out there, and I enjoy being outside and do a little weeding. Do not use pesticides around your house. Some of the provinces in Canada, Ontario, and I think British Columbia have banned the cosmetic use of pesticides. So 40% of the pesticides used are by home use, which contaminates our streams, contaminates water supply, and gets into the lakes and rivers around our home. So not using pesticides at home. To look, take an approach. If you've got some kind of pest, ask where it's coming from. Ask, can you live with it? Can you tolerate a little bit of it? And then move on and try to control it by removing food source, like you have ants or you have rodents. Ask why the pest is there. And you can do that with landscaping, too. You can plant crops there or plants that help control unwanted other plants.
I just want to tell a quick story about a success I had with pest control that was not toxic. As I used to live in an apartment building in San Francisco. A small apartment building had like 12 units or something. And there was an ant problem. And this is when I was still first learning about things. And so they notified all of us that we were going to have an exterminator come. And I said, no, I'm not having my unit sprayed. That's it, period. But I knew that everybody else was going to be sprayed. And so what I did was that I just used my common sense and I took some Elmer's glue and I watched where, and a sponge, and I watched where the ants were coming in and I just kind of wiped them up. And then I found like a little crack where they were coming in and I filled it with Elmer's glue. And then the next day they came in again and I did the same thing. And after 3 or 4 days, I had filled all the cracks with Elmer's glue. Now I want to tell you, this is honest. This story, what I'm telling you is true. I never saw another ant, and everybody else who were having their apartments exterminated all still had ants. I was the only one that didn't have ants.
Yeah, that's a great, great story. You should write that little story up because that's a great example of integrated pest management where you ask, well, how are the ants getting in there? And you then block the route, and they're going to go where they can get food and water and other nourishment for them. And if they can't get it and they're blocked, they'll go someplace else. So that's a great example of using integrated pest management.
Yeah, and you can use that for any pests because the pests need to stay outside in their environment. And we need to say this is our boundary, and we say that this is our boundary by filling in cracks, by putting out screens on the windows and things like that. And so it's just a matter of claiming our territory and saying that's your territory and this is our territory. We don't have to spray toxic chemicals all over the place. We don't need to kill the pests. The only reason we think they're pests is because they're in the wrong place. So we just need to put them in their place and claim our place. Very simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, with rodents, the same thing. Find out what the food source is. Don't use rodenticides on rodents because other creatures will eat those rats or mice, and they will get sick from eating that toxic material. So it's really important to be thinking not just of the pest, but also the consequences of using chemicals on the pest.
Yes.
I love your example about those ants. That's a great story.
Thank you. I love that story, too. Anyway, we now just have about 2 minutes left. So any final thing you want to say?
I think the most important thing is not to use pesticides. They should be the last, absolute last resort, whether it's herbicide or insecticide or rodenticide or fungicide. You know, do that only as a last resort. Learn about the biology of the pest. Get out there and do some weeding in your garden, hand weeding. Where I get my grandchildren out there and we go out weeding. It's very fun to do. It's a good family thing to do. And do not use pesticides. Think about where those pesticides are going when they flow off your property and into the streams and what the consequences of those might be. And think about the other birds and the other wildlife that you might be harming by using pesticides. So the important thing is take an integrated approach to management of pesticides. Remember that we live together with a lot of other creatures.
Yes, we do. And it's we're all interconnected, as Rachel Carson said. And I highly recommend that everybody read Silent Spring. It's an excellent, excellent book. And we just need to keep her memory alive and keep her message alive. So my guest today has been Dr. Stephen Gilbert. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Gilbert. And you can go to his... I'll let you say you're welcome. I hear you keep talking. Thank you for being here today.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. He's at toxopedia.org, and you can go there and get A Small Dose of Toxicology. That's his book, A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. And if you go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, you can just look for today's show. And click on the title, and it'll take you exactly to the page where you can get this book. It's a book, a basic book about toxicology that should be in every household. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dowd. Be well.